Most of the women that I interviewed, certainly those who were members of Mujeres Libres, pointed out to me in one way after another, and this was really what was the basis for the organization, that no matter how radical the compañeros were when they were out at their union meetings or even at the storefront schools and cultural centers, when they came back home or when they were at those meetings, they didn't pay a whole lot of attention to the women. They would laugh at them when they tried to speak. They would sexually harass them. They just wouldn't take them seriously. And I want to read you a piece from an interview with one of the women that I met, Pepita Carpena, who was herself had been very involved in the CNT in Barcelona and with the anarchist youth organization. And she described one of her experiences with a friend from this anarchist youth organization, which was typical of many, and I think was typical of the reasons why so many of these people felt like, we need to do something in addition to just being part of this organization. We need to educate these men. She says, I'll tell you a story. Because for me, what has always been my saving grace is that I'm very outgoing. She is a very lively kind of person. She also speaks a mile a minute, but I won't do that to you. And I'm not bashful, she said, about responding to people who give me a hard time. So one time, a compañero from the Juventudes, the youth movement, came over to me and said, you say you're so liberated. You're really not so liberated. And then she turned to me and she said, I'm telling you this so you'll see what the mentality of these men was. Because, he said to me, if I would ask you to give me a kiss, you wouldn't do it. I just stood there staring at him and thinking to myself, how am I going to get out of this one? And then I said to him, listen, when I want to go to bed with a guy, I'm the one that has to choose him. I don't go to bed with just anyone. You don't interest me as a man. I don't feel anything for you. Why should you want me to liberate myself, as you put it, by going to bed with you? That's no liberation for me. That's just making love simply for the sake of making love. No, I said to him, love is something that has to be like eating. If you're hungry, you eat. And if you want to go to bed with a guy, then... He was left speechless. But I did it with a dual purpose in mind, because I wanted to show him that that's not the way to educate compañeras. That's what the struggle of women was like in Spain, even with men from our own group. And I'm not talking about what it was like with the other guys. And that was, many people told me stories kind of like that, but she was extremely articulate about her experience. So this was the context in which these young women, most of them were between the ages of 16 and 20 when the war broke out, and they decided they needed to do something. So Mujeres Libres was founded by Mercedes Coma Posada, who was a journalist living in Madrid, Lucia Sanchez Sornil, who was also in Madrid, Amparo Poch, who was a doctor, actually living in Barcelona, and most of the rest of the people, working class, predominantly textile, women who were working in the textile industries, to try to deal with what they recognized as the specific subordination of working class women within capitalism, and to try to work within the movement to create an atmosphere that would take women, their lives, their experiences, their hopes, seriously. So what I want to do with the rest of the time that I have is to focus on what they took to be the importance of autonomy in that struggle, and how that worked itself out both programmatically and organizationally. Now, why was autonomy important to them? Partly for the reasons that go back to what I was saying before about direct action and self-organization and means and ends and creating, participating in creating the society of which one wants to be a part. The organization, they felt there needed to be an organization to address women as women in their particularity, and particularly to address the fact that levels of illiteracy were much higher among women than among men. And Spain was a very, very traditional society. Most women in Spain rarely were able to go outside of their houses, except to shop, without being accompanied by or chaperoned by a male. They were very ignorant about their bodies, sexuality, all of this, and that Mujeres Libres felt that all of these things they were going to have to address if women were really going to be able... Pardon? Louder? Oh. If they were really going to be able to take their place as women, as equals in the revolutionary movement. They also felt that autonomy was necessary because only if women were responsible for their own organization, including publishing their own magazine. They published a wonderful magazine called Mujeres Libres over the course of these 3 years. Could they take responsibility for themselves? Could they learn how to do all these things, putting on an anarchist book fair or publishing a magazine or driving a bus or all the things that you have to do in order to be a fully active and engaged member of an organization? And also, they wanted to have their own organization so that the men could see that women organized on their own, in fact, could do something, that they weren't incompetent. And the only way they felt that the men would know that was if they could see them actually doing these things without men telling them what and how to do all the time. So they developed really a whole set of programs with two separate but related goals. One was described in Spanish as capacitación, which I think there may be some French capacitación. Empowerment. It's kind of like empowerment, but it's not exactly empowerment. But it's helping people to become aware and fully develop their own capacities, really. Another way of thinking about that was all these processes of preparation for engagement in the revolution, preparation in the full sense that I was talking about a few minutes ago. And the second component, in addition to capacitación, was captación, which meant mobilizing women into the anarcho-syndicalist or the sort of what was called the libertarian movement. Because remember, there were two things going on. There was a social revolution going on, and there was this struggle against the fascists. And who was struggling against the fascists? All these different groups, including the Communist Party, the socialists, the anarchists, and they wanted to be sure that when women got drawn into this struggle, they were drawn in support of the libertarian, the anarchist-oriented groups, rather than the communist or the socialist groups. And in fact, since the Soviet Union was basically the only country of any substance, Mexico was giving money, but they just didn't have that much. Since the Soviet Union were the ones who were giving the most to the Republican forces, the strength of the Communist Party within Spain during the Civil War was strengthened enormously. It had, I think, 3,000 members in 1936, many, many thousands more by the end of the war, because all the support, all the money to buy arms to combat fascists that was coming in from the Soviets, and they were able to dictate a lot what was going on within the Republic. But Mujeres Libres was doing its part to try to make sure that women wouldn't be fooled by this so-called popular front, but really communist front rhetoric. Capacitación, this process of preparation or empowerment, I think is best understood to refer to the content of the activities of the organization. And there were many of them, a few. I mean, it's really astounding what they were able to do with very, very few resources in the middle of a civil war. Activities designed to overcome women's illiteracy and to prepare them to participate actively and effectively workforce. They went to factories, they would hold meetings before union meetings so that women who were in the unions could get used to hearing their voices in public and would be willing to speak up then when they were in mixed-sex groups. They had courses teaching people how to read and write, as I mentioned before. They had courses teaching women how to be tram drivers and to do other and to do agricultural work, which they had never been allowed to do before. They had courses, they mounted radio programs. They had programs to help people develop capacities to engage in public speaking so that when anarchist groups went around the country during the Civil War to kind of mobilize support, there would be able to be women on the podium as well so that people could see women as public speakers. And they provided them with information about childcare, motherhood, and sexuality and birth control. Again, all of which was pretty revolutionary in the Spanish context. Mujeres Libres became increasingly concerned, in addition to this capacitación, with captación, with trying to do what it could to support anarchist movement organizations and bring women into them. Now, within this context, Mujeres Libres rejected both feminism. It never defined itself as a feminist organization and, in fact, rejected the label of feminism because they understood that to mean striving for equality for women within an existing system of privileges, and they didn't want to have anything to do with that existing system of privileges. They also thought, as it still does, I guess, sometimes people think feminist means you're anti-male, and they were not anti-male. They were trying to work with men. They just were trying to get the men to take them seriously. So they never quite accepted this label of feminist. And at the same time, they were struggling to reject a secondary position within that anarchist movement. So they were trying to walk this very fine line. As they wrote in one of their dispatches to the movement, "We are aware of the precedent set by both feminist organizations and by political parties. We could not follow either of these paths. We could not separate the women's problem from the social problem, nor could we deny the significance of the first, the women's problem, by converting women into a simple instrument for any organization, even our own libertarian organization. The intention that underlay our activities was much broader, to serve a doctrine, not a party, to empower women, to make of them individuals capable of contributing to the structuring of the future society. Individuals who have learned to be self-determining, not to follow blindly the dictates of any organization." So this was the reason why organizational autonomy, a separate organization for women, was very important to them. They believed that only through their own self-directed action could women come to see themselves as capable and competent, able to participate as equals in the movement, and would the men then also be able to see them as capable and competent. As Lucia Sanchez O'Neill had written as early as 1935, "It's not up to him, the male anarchist, to establish the functions of a woman in society, however elevated or highfalutin he might think they were. The anarchist way is to allow the woman to act herself to achieve her freedom without tutorials or pressures in any direction. That she should be able to move in the direction that she feels she needs to go." They expressed this position over and over again. Over the course of many years, tried to make clear through the programs that they were organizing that they were certainly not opposed to or in opposition to the anarcho-syndicalist movement in any way. Rather, they were trying to encourage women to join it. But they never quite succeeded in getting the kind of recognition from the larger movement that they expected or hoped for, and never, I think, quite convinced the majority, anyway, of men in most of these organizations that they weren't somehow engaged in activities that were undermining the unity of the movement. And I think anybody who's been involved in left organizations is quite aware of this phenomenon. It hardly was a problem only in the 30s. The men simply could not understand why there had to be a separate organization for women. You know, they said, we don't have an organization for men. Why do you need one for women? And no matter how many times they tried to explain this process of capacitación and the different situation of women, it was really very, very hard. They did get some support from movement organizations. Many of the local unions supported local chapters of Mujeres Libres. There were men who wrote for the magazine occasionally, although they didn't want to take much in the way of help from men because they wanted it to be clear that it was women who were running the magazine. And there were men in the larger anarchist organization who supported the efforts of Mujeres Libres to be sort of included within the larger domain of the anarcho-syndicalist front, we could call it. The clearest example of the, I guess, what from the point of view of Mujeres Libres was the incomplete acceptance of the organization as an anarchist organization took place in October 1938. There was a major plenary conference of all of the anarchist and anarcho-syndicalist organizations and movements in Spain that took place in Barcelona. And it was called by the three groups who were the three main organizations, the CNT, the Confederación Nacional de Trabajo, the National Confederation of Labor, the Juventudes Libertarias, the anarchist youth organization, because they were aware that they needed a separate organization for young people, and the FAI, the Federación Anarquista Ibérica, the anarchist movement. And Mujeres Libres asked to come to that and to be recognized as the fourth arm of the movement, which they thought was completely obvious. They asked to receive an invitation, and they didn't get it, so they went anyway, which was a very good direct action strategy, which wasn't all that difficult because, as I mentioned, most members of Mujeres Libres were also members of one or another union. They were otherwise involved in the anarchist movement. So they went to this Congress as, you know, in their capacity as delegates from, you know, this local committee or that union, but they were also there to represent Mujeres Libres. And they sent a formal delegation of 15 women seeking formal accreditation and recognition of Mujeres Libres as a constituent organization of the movement. There was a long debate, at the end of which the assembly agreed that the women from Mujeres Libres as Mujeres Libres could not attend this gathering, except at that point that it was being, that the question of their recognition as an organization was being discussed. So first of all, that from the point of view of the women, of course, marginalized them completely from the Congress. And in the end, they decided they couldn't make a decision about this at the Congress because the way the Congress worked, people had to have known ahead of time this wasn't on the agenda, blah, blah, blah. They were going to send it back, and it never got sent back, of course, because the Civil War either went underground or had to flee. But in the meantime, Mujeres Libres wrote to try to respond to the arguments that were raised in these meetings about the need for autonomy. And I just want to read you a little piece of one of the things they argued, because I think it was a very explicit statement of the need for autonomy within a larger context. They argued that anarchism and syndicalism were not the exclusive province of men, that as compañeras, as themselves militants within the organization, they too had not just a right but a responsibility to attempt to propagate libertarian ideas and practices. And then they said, you can't bring up as a point against us, against our self-determination, that anarchism doesn't admit of differences between the sexes. Because if that were true, then we would have to say that none of our existing organizations are truly anarchist organizations, because whether deliberately or undeliberately, they are basically the exclusive province of men. So if you're going to say that anarchism isn't about sex differences, then you're not anarchists either, any more than we are. And you've got to make a place for us. Not just for us, but for your sake. Because this society that we're all trying to make has got to be one that incorporates everybody. So Mujeres Libres demanded that this new society and the efforts to create it had to include women as well as men. They insisted that the movement treat women equally with men while at the same time respecting women's differences from men. Not, again, an easy position to maintain, but they were there almost 70 years ago. And it was this perspective, I think, which represents Mujeres Libres' unique contribution to the development of the libertarian movement in Spain, and at that time, which posed the most serious challenges in relation to that movement. Because for Mujeres Libres, women's differences from men required a separate and autonomously controlled set of programs for capacitación, for empowerment. But treating them equally with men required programs of captación, mobilizing to engage them fully in the movement. And without a recognition both of those differences and of the equality, which they insisted was going to happen practically only through the existence of an autonomous organization working within the confines of this larger movement. Otherwise, the movement itself was not going to be able to achieve its larger goals. Mujeres Libres, unfortunately, did not succeed in convincing the movement of its point of view before the end of the war. It struggled to undertake both these empowerment programs and the mobilization programs largely on its own, despite what appeared to it to be the relative indifference of the rest of the movement. And although its articulation of this project distinguished it from most other women's organizations of the time, I haven't found another one that was able to articulate this dilemma and to try to pose a way through it as effectively as Mujeres Libres did. It was unfortunately no more able than many of them, and I have to say many contemporary organizations, to bring fully into reality an autonomous organization of women operating within that larger movement context. So I'll stop there and take whatever questions or comments you might have. Oh, and I just want to say the other thing is if people are, we don't have copies of the book here because it's out of print at the moment, but I have outside on the table lots of little pamphlets and brochures that are pieces of things, and you're free to take them so you can have some information about this. The book is called Free Women of Spain. Well, it was about anarchist women, not just Mujeres Libres, but women in the anarchist movement during the Civil War.